Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketing professionals. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world, but if this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Asomi Ithia, the senior product professional, author, mentor, and co-host of the Product Group, about product and marketing integration. Plus, clients and markets director at Deloitte UK, Ben Perkins, on change, and marketing consultant Doug Marshall celebrates some great business marketing. There's lots of talk of the need for integration of marketing and sales, and I think in many organisations this is now seen as something of an essential. But there's much less discussion of the need for the integration of marketing and product management. I'm speaking with Asomi Ithia, senior product professional, author, mentor, and co-host of the Product Group. Asomi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Dave. Great to be part of the BMC podcast.
It's great to have you here. And before we dive into the importance of product management and integration with it, can you tell us a bit about the Product Group?
Yes, absolutely. So Product Group is a monthly meetup for people interested in product management, not even just product people, but anyone who's interested in the discipline of product. So whether that's customer discovery, stakeholder management, product metrics, how to create a product, product role, working agile, etc. And the short version of the meetup, and it's actually not too dissimilar from BMC, is that it's split into two sections. It's all about conversation and discussion. We have a topic of the night, which the whole group discuss and contribute to. We have a guest speaker, but they're never allowed to bring slides. They tell their story, and then all of the attendees fire questions at them. So it's very, very interactive, very discussion led. In terms of people that attend, it is predominantly product, UX, engineering, BAs, project managers, some consultants. Sometimes we get marketing people, but I probably should use this as an opportunity to welcome marketing people to come to our meetup, because it would be good to hear some marketing voices.
Sure, it's probably worth saying it's kind of the product management equivalent of the BMC, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
The way it works. So as a product professional, what's your view, Asomi, of the current state of integration between marketing and product teams in B2B organizations?
Am I allowed to give the chicken cop-out answer of saying it depends on the organization? Probably not. So the top line for me is it's good, and I think it's continuously developing and evolving and getting better. I'm going a step further than that. I'd probably talk about some of the good practices that I've either been part of or have seen, and maybe touch on some of the not so great things that I've seen.
Okay.
And I think, and probably I might over mention this particular point, but for me, one of the primary pieces is clarity or clarification around the roles between the two teams. Now, in some respects, we might talk about product as being all about focusing on understanding the customer's needs, and then building products that match those needs. And then on the marketing side, we might talk about marketing being there to take the product to market and do the messaging and the promotional stuff. So where I've seen it work really well is where those two roles are quite clearly defined. Now, I'd actually also add, by talking about marketing is as a discipline and as a global understanding of it, is much more mature than product management. And sometimes I think that's where some of the friction and the negatives might occur. And I kind of think of product as it's growing. There's many more product roles, many more organizations who are doing product today. But if you, and Dave, you'll remember this, if you think back to the early 2000s when functions like marketing and also IT were in that moment of trying to establish where they fit in an organization, there was no CMOs, there was no CIOs, CTOs, etc. Product is probably in that space at the moment, in that it has lots of value, it's delivering oodles of value around the world, but it's still maturing and people are understanding. And that then leads to the lack of clarification of the role and where it fits. But in saying that, I have seen and I've been part of some really, really good practices where the two roles are quite clearly defined.
You think there's an ideal level of integration between the two areas?
I think yes. And I think that it's not a one size fits all. I think it's down to the organizations working out where each fits in. And I, the definition I described before is probably a good definition of where the two might sit and how they might interact. You have other organizations where, and this is almost like talking about some of the, where you get some of the challenges and some of the problems with the integration, is where you have lack of clarity of roles. And where you have scenarios where, and I can think of more than one scenario where I've been in like this, where there's a battle for almost like ground share of who does what. And one example would be along the lines of product requirements. So you've got a product team who strongly feel that they should be in charge of that. They're looking at the product data. They're talking to the customers, understanding their problems. Then you've also got a marketing team who are doing some insight as well, and or based on hunches. And I shouldn't be totally unfair by saying it's purely based on hunches, who feel like they should be driving the requirements around the product. And that causes issues. But where you have a scenario where both roles are quite clearly defined, I think it becomes a lot easier for both sides. I'd also say that another part of that, and in my mind, I think of this as the two walking the journey together. And this is very much about teams coming together at the beginning of an initiative, or if it's working on an ongoing product, it's coming together regularly, talking about the product, understanding where the product's going. If it's on an initiative, it's things like early notification. So I remember one of the things I've always tried to do is, and I put marketing, operations, customer service, etc. into this camp, is give people early notification that there is a product coming along. So people can engage and you know, in some respects, it's the, hi, I'm coming with something. Tell me if you can help, tell me if you can't, and or you're aware that it's coming up. So I think that's one of the cores around walking together. Other things are, and from a product side, it's products sharing, customer, the insights that they capture from the market. So, you know, if in the purest sense of product, we're looking at what's the problem that we're solving for the customer, how are they solving it today, how can we do it in a better way? It's sharing those insights earlier. So then when the marketing team get involved, one, they've got the story behind it, and two, they can use some of those elements when creating that messaging and looking at the channels that they use to go to market. There's probably a few others. If in short, there's things like the reverse of that. So marketing teams, and there is overlap in some of these areas with marketing teams also looking at the market, also doing some customer understanding, and it's almost pooling that insight together. So it's a two-way thing. The product team share with the marketing team, and vice versa, the marketing team then also share with the product team. So there's this pot of insight that everyone's using and gaining from. And where I've seen that done really, really well, it works. And the teams are all almost on the same page because they're all seeing and telling the same story around where the product should go. And then the last, sorry,
on that then, let's name some organizations. Are there organizations, let's name those organizations that, as you say, are doing that integration well today.
Do you know what? I'm going to sit on the fence on that one, if I may. And I'd actually say, and give you a reason why I sit on the fence with this, because particularly, I mean, my background's in larger organizations, I would actually say that it's, I could name one or two, and I can name some of the organizations I've worked for who have done it well. But my experience is it's more about pockets in organizations, because a chunk of this comes down to individuals and how individuals want to work. So I can think, for example, of, and I'm not going to name names because I'm going to tell a good and a bad story here. I can think of places where I've worked on one initiative or on one product, and I've had a really hard or negative experience with marketing as well as maybe some other function. But then I can also talk about working with other teams in the same organization where it's gone really, really well, because there's been an appreciation on both sides of, actually, we're both here to achieve the same end goal. But within that, we both understand our roles within that. And, you know, some of that is down to, I hate to use the word kudos, but sometimes it's, you know, everyone goes to work on the basis that they want to achieve something. Some people will go to work with a view that I want to achieve something as a group and I want to contribute to a group. Others will go to work thinking I want to achieve just for me because I don't know, I want to write a great line on my CV. And where you have the, it's my CV, it's me, it makes it harder to build that integration and build those stronger relationships and work together. But where you have that group mentality, then you have better scenarios.
How much do you think that the fit is really just down to the people involved versus the structures or the governance that you put in place?
I think it's a bit of both, because, you know, it's a bit like the saying of the way people act completely overrides whatever culture or ethos an organization has. However, the ethos of an organization will help to drive that. So, and an example of that would be, and I can definitely think of an organization I've been in where this has been the case, the roles on paper are quite clearly defined, but then someone, and typically it is from a C-suite perspective, has decided that that's not quite how they want it to operate. So they might drive their agenda. And as soon as their people see their leader driving that type of agenda, it gives them license where otherwise they may not have to go and do that and act behave in that way. So I think, yes, it's partly down to the individuals, and it's also down to the culture of the organization. But let's remember, and this is not a conversation about organization cultures, but in many organizations, there are lots of microcultures, and it's the microcultures that typically win out, which is why you can go from one function to another and your experiences may be completely different.
Co-host of the product group is Somi Ithia. Thank you very much. We're working in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, and political and social conflict dominating our lives. That calls for us to do business marketing differently, both now and in the future. In our show and tell series, we're hearing from client side and agency side marketers in businesses from startup to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, changes in brand, marketing strategy, messages and channels. They'll be sharing experiences and offering advice. Today, it's the turn of Client and Markets Director for Consumer and Industrial Products at Deloitte UK, Ben Perkins. Ben, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to join this, to be here again. I'd like to talk today a bit about my world, which is obviously professional services marketing, and also about the sort of the challenges of working through the pandemic and Brexit and all the other disruptions we've had. And I'd like to do that through sort of talking about three big themes I think have really emerged in the last year. And these are, the first is really what I'd describe as a change in mindset from sell to serve. Secondly, is a sort of change in our sort of strategic approach from something that's longer term to something that's more reactive. And thirdly, it's in terms of the channel and the way that we go to market and engage with our clients. And that's the shift from sort of from physical, from in-person to a sort of more virtual platform and more virtual experience. Now, I'll try and expand upon each of those themes. So firstly, in terms of the shift in mindset from sell to serve. So we as a business, we as marketers within our business have had a really clear and strong message from leadership to stop what we were doing in kind of March, April last year. So that was stop in-flight campaigns, stop upcoming activities, stop everything and listen to our clients. And more importantly than that, to see what we could do to help. So to ask them, were they okay? Well, what did they need? They didn't need sales messages or competition for their retention. They needed information and they needed insight and they needed things that would help them and their businesses survive and recover. And what we found was that the response to that was that it was really appreciated and it really helped us redirect our efforts and investments and restart our campaigns and focus it all in the areas that they needed most. And one of the real benefits to taking this kind of step back and time to listen and really think about our clients has been that it's created a much closer and deeper connection with many of them. And that's one of the real positives, as I see it, from the last 12 months. We've learned more about our clients. We've literally seen into their homes and their daily lives. We've met their families. We've met their pets. And for me, it's been a wonderful and powerful reminder that CFO at Company X is also a person just like me, and they may be struggling just like me. And so we need to be sensitive about that and think about how we're sort of communicating messages and the messages that we're communicating to them. So that's kind of theme one. The second point is this kind of reversal in terms of we've always been told not to be reactive, right? Reactive was bad. But here, in this case, we've had to be reactive. And not only have we had to be reactive, but we've had to keep on reacting and changing and adapting. So as I said before, we stopped campaigns, we delayed others, we cancelled events. And one of the things that we took a really strong decision around early on was that even if we could do physical in-person events, even if it was allowed by the legislation and the government and everything else, it didn't feel like the right thing to do. So we switched early to virtual, we committed to that, and it's not been an entirely smooth journey, but we've learned a lot along the way and more about that later on. The other big switch we've seen in terms of that switch from strategic to reactive is that those monthly, those quarterly, those annual cycles have become fortnightly or weekly. Now, this has obviously put a lot of pressure on our marketing teams, our client teams, our account teams, all of whom have been at home, all of whom or many of whom are working at home and trying to homeschool kids. Their partners are at home, their relatives at home, and everyone's trying to work within the same space. It's been extremely difficult to operate, let alone operate at a greater speed. But we've had to up the pace, because things have been moving and changing so quickly, and not to up the pace would mean that what we were doing, the campaigns that we were running, the things that we were trying to, the messages we were trying to land with our clients would be out of date and effectively useless. So we've had to learn to respond faster. And our focus has really been on that speed to market. And what that has meant is that we've had to limit our ambition accordingly. So kind of fewer things faster and better. So we've also had to be really clear on our segmentation, our client segmentation, because across our portfolio, depending on the segment that those clients were in, dictates whether the messages were really around survival or recovery, or if you were an online business, you're thriving, you're growing, there's lots of potential there. Well, so we had to really think about those messages within that context. The other thing is that our content, the content that we used in our marketing campaigns, it had to be practical and focused upon the short term. A long-term view, a 2030 scenario, is useless if you don't survive 2020. So I mentioned at the start around virtual, the shift to virtual. We've polarized really in terms of our virtual events between two things. One is the big bang, the big production with animation and creativity and diverse speakers and videos, incredible content, and really engaging big set piece events. We've polarized between those and then very small, intimate 4 or 5 client round tables where everybody gets a chance to speak, everyone is involved, everybody contributes. And we found that anything in between those two extremes is a waste of time because it's not differentiated, it's not engaging, it's neither personal nor impressive and entertaining within that context. We've seen that attendances at virtual events has been fantastic, engagement in campaigns has really increased. There's a really strong pull for insight, for data, for a point of view on what's happening and what's going to happen. And I think that there's a really big learning for me here. From professional services, marketing has always been about in-person, high touch engagement, meetings, personal events, etc. But what we've seen is that clients have really appreciated the convenience that virtual campaigns and events have offered them. And that's definitely something that we need to continue to incorporate for the long term. So I think that the world of work has definitely changed forever. It certainly has for me. And to paraphrase Steve Rowe and the team at M&S, I think that things will never be the same again. And this applies as much to business marketing as to any other area or dimension of business.
Ben Perkins, Client and Markets Director for Consumer and Industrial Products at Deloitte UK. Thank you so much. There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by marketing consultant and MD of Achieve B2B Marketing, Doug Marshall, to celebrate it. Doug, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave.
So it's good to see you. So before we get started, tell us a bit about Achieve B2B.
So Achieve B2B Marketing is a marketing consultancy for information and learning businesses. We help them make better marketing decisions and help them grow.
Great. So there's some great business marketing out there, I think. What's caught your eye?
Well, I want to talk about my experience with a couple of people I know who are salespeople.
Okay.
And I think it's important.
You're bringing in the dirty word already so early in this podcast.
Indeed, I am. So I was talking to a mate of mine, and he was talking about some things that he was doing in LinkedIn. I'd heard about social selling before, and I wanted to find out what salespeople were doing. So this friend of mine, he was doing some great things, and he was using LinkedIn search functionality to find the prospects that he wanted to have conversations with. Now, any salespeople will tell you at the moment, it's really hard to get hold of people on the phone. There's been a trend that it's been getting more difficult. Nowadays with COVID, people aren't in the office, it's even more difficult. So modern salespeople are using social selling. And what my friend was doing, he was using LinkedIn's brilliant search functionality to find prospects who were absolutely right for him. But rather than going in with immediately trying to connect with them and trying to sell to them, he was actually doing it in a more subtle way. So he was finding those prospects using Sales Navigator and then starting to find those people that were actually active on LinkedIn. He was then liking what they were doing, commenting on that post, really beginning to have an online conversation. And then when the time was ready, when he felt he'd built really good rapport, he would then ask them for a digital coffee. And only then he'd actually connect with them. And he's found he's been able to have some really good meetings, which has actually led to some really good business. So I think that for me is a good example of social selling. Just one other example I give you as well is another friend of mine. And what he's been doing, he's been getting great introductions, which again has been leading to some really good meetings. And he's using the power of LinkedIn's second degree connections. So what he'll do, he'll look at his first degree connections and see of those first degree connections, using other search criteria as well. It might be industry, for example, it might be number of employees, who they can introduce him to that are their first degree connections. And by doing that, his first degree connections are very happy because they trust him and they know him to introduce him to their first degree connections, his second degree connections. So again, and he's told me that's worked really well. He said some really good business meetings. And he might be asking me, why am I talking about salespeople? Well, I think social selling is a good opportunity for marketers to have really good conversations with sales leaders and really to actually create better connections with sales leaders. So what I've been doing is to really, first of all, look at salespeople and check their LinkedIn profiles. And if you check your sales colleagues' LinkedIn profiles, if they look like an online CV, if they look like how it was for the last recruitment drive that they had for themselves, then that's probably not right for them today. If it looks like a profile which actually is a customer focused profile, which is really telling the customer, this is how I can help you, this is the value that I can provide, that's a better way of doing it. So what I would say is, if you spot a salesperson with a LinkedIn profile that looks like it's an online CV, you've got an opportunity to have a really good conversation. To ask them, for example, have you done your SSI score in LinkedIn? Because that gives you some great advice actually about how to improve the way you use LinkedIn. And you might even think about bringing in a social selling program or running one in-house to help those sales leaders use LinkedIn better. And there's a point about this, which is that salespeople now, they're having to develop their own personal brands. Really advanced sales leaders, they're doing podcasts like this. They're going on to Clubhouse. They're really building up an online brand for themselves. And I think marketing people have a real opportunity to get involved and help those salespeople develop their personal brands.
And so I've got to ask, what does the Doug Marshall LinkedIn profile look like then?
Well, if you have a look at it, it won't look like an online CV. You have to practice what you preach. And hopefully I'm not a cobbler with poor shoes in this respect.
So there you go. You heard it here. Go and visit Doug's LinkedIn profile right Absolutely. Away. He's the MD of Achieve B2B Marketing. Doug, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Asomi Ithia, Ben Perkins and Doug Marshall. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But that's it for now. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.